Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 191st episode of the Mod State Podcast. My friend, how are you?
Hey, I'm better now. It's good to be back with you, as always.
Yeah, absolutely. It's we've got a rare afternoon recording session today, which is nice. There's actually light.
We're usually like digital vampires of sorts.
Right?
Always midnight or later, it feels like. It
seems like. Yeah, at least on your time, Mountain Time's a little behind that. But yeah, it's normally...
Especially, I mean, I do most of my writing at night, and here I was, you know, this afternoon, aside from college stuff, you know, editing articles from the day. I'm like, what's wrong with this picture?
I feel like I could have a cup of coffee, but I don't have one right now. But that's okay.
Of coffee in the big time.
Cup of coffee in the big time. Oh, God.
Brother-in-law and I were talking about that video the other day. How many nicknames did his opponent have? It was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. And I'm assuming that none of those three names were on his birth certificate.
No, I could imagine not.
Like, dear God, the amount of titles.
For those of you who don't know Cup of Coffee in the Big Time, you just, it would help.
Randy Savage on cocaine. Yeah. And there's an interview with him with Mean Gene, God rest his soul.
It'll only bring you closer to, well, I don't know what it'll do for you. It will certainly make you a little bit more conscious of the mainstream culture and just make your day better.
Well, it'll tell you how, I mean, we entertained quite a few people with that in Bethesda. Dear God. Yeah. How many times have we watched that video? That and Leroy Jenkins.
Leroy Jenkins.
Did I tell you about the day? Chief Arnold, I heard him down in his office by himself. I'm like, what is he down there raving about? And he screamed that out of nowhere, the whole Leroy Jenkins thing. I won't do that here. But I'm like, and I walked down there and he's in there by himself and I just backed away. I didn't say anything. I'm like, whatever. Okay.
Well, with that, we decided to bring you, it certainly will not be the conclusion of this. However, instead of glossing over it, I think it's important to discuss Mueller's closing public statement press conference. Well, it really wasn't a press conference. It was more or less just a goodbye speech. As he closes the office at the special counsel, closes the special counsel office at the Department of Justice. So, that's kind of it. Honestly, it's a little lackluster. Again, what's interesting to me is how eager people are still eager for the bombshell. And it's funny.
Hey, coming, folks.
When I turn on the NPRs, I turn on the CNNs, I turn on the MSNBC, not the Fox Newses, but just even just any outlet, anyone talking about this, it's the judicial pundits or reporters who he'll say something, Mueller will say something, or Barr will say something, and there's an analysis on, well, what was really interesting is the way he said this or the way he admitted this. And to me, it says it's almost as if I understand and I appreciate your dedication to uncovering the truth. And I think journalists, there's an important place for journalists. It's the fourth estate, right? So we need that. However, what we don't need is this mincing of words or trying to find something that I just quite frankly don't think is there.
Right. And I mean, Mueller is famously succinct, and we'll get into it in a little bit, but there were a number of things that he said in his statement that A, we'd already heard as he promised in the report, and B, left no room for this continued speculation.
Yeah, and look, we'll just cut to the chase. The thing that people come back to, the phrase that everyone comes back to is, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, but it's Mueller saying, look, we couldn't exonerate the president. However, we didn't have enough to charge him with anything, and I'm not going to charge him. That's up to Congress. So anyway, thanks for your time. To which it's like, well, it's look, he couldn't exonerate the president, so there's got to be something there. To which they sort of
several issues here.
Yeah. So again, yeah, it's unfortunate that Robert Mueller leaves with some ambiguous. It's a gray area, but again, I don't think anyone should be surprised that he's leaving with some sort of gray area. And I remember a year ago.
I think it is. I think maybe his wording cries out for ambiguity. Look, but our justice system is very binary.
Yeah, but it is. I mean, you can't. I personally think it is not black and white. I mean, it's a gray area. He says there isn't enough to charge him for a crime, but there isn't anything that says we completely exonerate him. That's it. It's a gray area.
That's beautiful, Nate, but with respect to you and to the special counsel, I'd like to point out that our judicial system is not based on the ability to exonerate someone or not. Our judicial system is based on the presumption of innocence. Therefore, and remember, Barr has gone on since and said, oh, yes, he could have indicted the sitting president. That's like instructions in the military. Instructions are not laws. They're there to be to be discarded if the moment calls for it. Okay, same thing. He could have indicted the president. Absolutely. He chose to punt the ball for whatever reason. I don't know why. That's the ambiguity here. But as far as, in my mind, is there any, and this isn't me being a mouthpiece for the administration. You know me better than that. This is me saying, okay, in our country, last I checked, it's you're innocent until proven guilty. Mueller didn't have the goods, A, and B, he had every opportunity in his statement to indicate that he thought Barr did the wrong thing, the Attorney General did the wrong thing, and he expressed no qualms whatsoever with the redacted report. None.
Yeah, I'll give you that through and through. He had the chance, especially in that press conference or that farewell speech to go after Barr. I mean, at that point he was out the door and he could have said anything he wanted, and he didn't go against Barr. He didn't I agree.
Next point. And that is, I mean, we've discussed this and I alluded to it in my response to both volumes of the report, being the fact that this, look at the Watergate scandal, okay? And Jeff Shepard Esquire, his efforts, ironically, alongside another group involving John Dean, they thought they were about to uncover a bunch of dirt on Nixon when they unsealed the grand jury records, but come to find out, it only remunerated Jeff Shepard's work. But the reality is, it took over four decades to get those grand jury records unsealed. Why? Because technically speaking, they're supposed to be sealed forever. So that's where this comes into Nadler and Schiff and Company. In my mind, and if they were Republicans, I would say the same thing. And conversely, I'm not arguing the Republicans are meek and mild as the freshly fallen snow and have pure motives here. In this case, however, when it comes to wanting every item redacted to be shown from the Mueller report, which includes sealed grand jury records, they're simply moving the goalpost to an area that Barr can't possibly fulfill. It's beyond unreasonable. Yeah, so it's like there's never going to be that way. And that look, I mean, can you look at that as anything other than pandering to their base?
Well, yeah, and I'm right there with you. I think it is a pandering. And look, I said this, and the case in point is 1 year ago, 8 months ago, when this began, I talked to a lot of people who were convinced that every new development in this case was going to be the nail in the coffin for impeachment, smoking indictment, gun, and jail time. I mean, you can just go to the HuffPost, and I mean that because within those comment sections, within those forums, even on the Reddits and even just moderate Democratic forums, it was, look, this guy's a crook, he's going to jail, and there was never a smoking gun. And from the beginning of this, I think you and I cautioned and said, I would not be too sure. And as this investigation went on and things weren't coming to light, 2+, you know, year and a half, 2 years later, that we still hadn't had anything, that I said, listen, we can go back and listen to us. There is not a smoking gun. There's not going to be much that comes to this. And so now that there isn't, there is this, there's this push to,
we're going to punish that, Bob Barr.
Well,
or wait, there, William Barr.
There's a, and look, I'm not, I won't lie. It is kind of weird that you would bring in a, and I don't mean that it's weird. It would it be something that I would do if I was the president? Probably. However, I hate this word, but optics, right? When you bring in a former attorney general who has been very clear about executive power.
There's an expansive view.
Yes, of executive power. It's just the way it looks. Barr came in and did exactly what he was supposed to do. So does that play into the left saying, like, look, this guy's the he looks like a private attorney for the president? Absolutely. I get it, sure, 100%.
The fact that grand jury records don't get unsealed.
Yes, that's the truth. Look, and when you don't have the smoking gun, even if
it
you
took
think
four decades from Watergate.
Yeah, even if Robert Mueller's overall report and what he said seems ambiguous, the reality is that digging deeper doesn't mean that you're going to find something that Robert Mueller probably didn't. The chances of you finding something in his report that he crafted and his team took care of, the fact that you would find something is like, I guess the question is, what are you looking for? What do you think he's hiding?
That's just it. I mean, go back to Mueller's statement. I know we hit on this, but to underscore this for folks, he had every opportunity. We're talking about somebody that had all the resources in the world at his disposal, or he might as well, okay, concerning indictments, whoever he wanted to go after, okay, and it's 37 plus at this point, last count, all right? He had every opportunity to express a modicum of displeasure at the way Barr released the redacted report. He didn't. He had every opportunity to criticize the way that Barr has handled the report. He did not do that. So at this point, I'm going, y'all really are just going to move the goalposts, right, to an area that Barr can't possibly fulfill. So then you get to say, aha, you see?
Yeah. So the next question. So the next question then is, what are we doing here? I think it's fair to have supported the investigation up until the point that Robert Mueller said, I don't really have anything. I passed off what was not within my scope to Southern District of New York, to DC, and they're handling stuff like the inauguration committee, et cetera, which, you know, you might find that there's some weird, there's some funny business that comes out of there, but that's not really what we're talking about here. The point is we're Mueller, arguably one out of this entire debacle, is probably most people can point to him as a fairly trustworthy person, right? I mean, I don't know the guy, but he seems fairly, even as a Republican, I trust the guy. I think he,
except for his characterization on exoneration, yes.
Well, yes, but we're at the point now that the question is, what are we doing? What is the point of this, and is it a pandering to the base? Because we left-leaning Democrats, et cetera, have been pointing to the pandering of President Trump to his base and doing things that are not in the majority or in majority opinion, but doing it to pander to a base. And
I
now
mean, that's a switch.
What's that?
That's a switch.
Right. Well, no. So this has been the complaint, right? He's just pandering to a base. The things that he's doing.
I know, that's what I mean.
Now,
like,
yeah,
a real change,
yeah.
Here.
So now it seems like y'all are doing the same thing. You're now pandering to a base because the chance, statistical probability of you finding something that Robert Mueller didn't find, that's somehow written in the report, the underlying evidence. What is the chances that you find something that he didn't, or that he misinterpreted, or...
I want to ask you a second plank here that Nadler and Schiff and company have been howling about, and that's this business of the refusal of McGahn and company to testify. I would like to point something out, and this is obvious from the report on, okay? The Trump administration took the exact opposite approach of the Nixon administration. And based on the results, I'd say they chose wisely. But the Nixon administration attempted to stonewall and deny access. No, you're not going to testify because it's executive privilege. Okay. Well, the Trump administration very early on denied access to no one. They allowed whoever, Hope Hicks, Don McGahn, on down the line to sit with Robert Mueller as long as they wanted him. Okay. I think it was McGahn that put, what, 30 plus hours in?
Yeah.
Okay. So then that I'm going somewhere with this. Draw a little tether, a little line here, if you will, between how that matches up with the president now impeding the investigation. When the reality is, you know, by saying, you know, Don McGahn's now not going to testify, okay, the point to all of this is they had unfettered access to these men and women. Robert Mueller got everything he wanted with that regard, except for a sit-down with the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't come up with the goods. Now you want to cry foul about Don McGahn not appearing before Congress? That's the same as them crying about Robert Mueller not appearing before Congress. There's nothing left for them to say.
Yeah.
So now they want to move the goalposts on the president and say, ah, you see? Now he's going to not allow his people. Well, my God, how many times? You know, the fact is we both know. This would drag on until November 2020, and in fact, it will in one form or another.
Yeah, it will.
But they would keep going. If he allowed for his people to testify right now, Nate, they would have a different one every chance they got through the election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To me, it's like, what incentive does the Trump administration have at this point to cooperate after, let's be real here, they denied access to nobody?
Yeah. So,
I mean, how are they supposed to cooperate?
Yeah. Okay. So then let's move on to the maybe more important question in speculation here. And that is, let's pretend that what you say is true. So that this carries out until November 2020 or right before, let's say, summer of 2020. What ramifications does this have for the reelection of Trump? Because, quite frankly, unless something comes out of the Southern District of New York, all right, let's just say something. Because it doesn't, quite frankly, have to be Trump's direct involvement, but enough of his people, maybe within his business, doing something shady. These are hypotheticals, of course, but it is a potential because there are investigations going on in various states. And okay, so if something like that comes out, that's a game changer. But if we keep dragging out, what's that?
What would it take in your mind? What constitutes, I mean, just hypothesize, what's a game changer here?
What's a game changer? Well, I mean, gosh.
If anything on Donald Trump personally, we'd know.
Well, but again, we're talking about the scope of the Mueller investigation, a collusion or conspiracy.
Who had the unlimited resources of the federal government.
And obstruction. So if he found something, like he found something quote-unquote interesting that he then pushed off to the Southern District of New York, like Roger Stone, right? So there could be, and there are other investigations going on, more or less towards the Trump business, the inaugural committee, etc. There might be some things that come up. And I don't mean them as game changers where the president gets impeached. I just mean...
He loses re-election.
Exactly.
So if they were found to have been laundering illicit campaign cash, that would be enough?
I mean, I don't know. It just depends on how it plays out. You know what? His base is so loyal, it might not matter.
That's just it. I mean, right now, whether anybody likes it or not, he's got an ardent plurality for the country.
But his base is not enough for him to get reelected unless
that's what I mean. So he's got to reach that independent crowd, the you and I voters that are willing to go out of the way. To me, do the Democrats run a great risk here? And my answer to this, I've already said before, is yes, but you can answer how you will. Do they run a massive risk here by continuing along a line of oversight that, like it or not, Gallup is twice now said over 60% of the American people feel like it's gone far enough. Mm-hmm. You want to do that next November?
Here's the problem. If we were 6 months away from, so let's say fast forward six, maybe 10 months. Now Mueller comes out with this entire thing. I think they're safe to push it all the way up to the 2020 election. The fact that it's 2 years is far too long. And they would, what they need, what they are, I think, ultimately hoping for is something,
18 months.
Yeah, something else to come out of like the Southern District of New York. Because if there's embezzlement in inaugural funds, et cetera, that's enough to paint back. That's enough to point back at the president, whether or not he was directly involved, and say, look, we told you this guy is slimy. The people around him are slimy, and you can run with that for another 10 months.
But you do see how risky a gambit this is.
Yes.
Because what if nothing comes out?
Exactly. But the problem is there's nothing else you can do, honestly. Even if 60% say they're fatigued, the problem is you lose. Let's say Trump has a 40% base. This is all hypotheticals. He has a 40% base that are loyal with him. He could literally, he could name himself the dictator tomorrow, and he's still got that 40% base. Okay. Likewise, there's a 40% base that are loyal to not really the Democratic Party, but left-leaning progressive ideals. Okay.
So there's that 10% that doesn't give a shit. They're never going to vote. Then there's that middle swing percentage. It's really about 3 or 4% of the voting populace that decides this thing.
Exactly. So
that's going to wear out.
Exactly. So this is the problem. Now, is it enough for them to swing to Trump? Probably not. But it's enough
to nominate.
It
greatly depends on who the Democrats nominate.
Yeah, that's very true. But it's also maybe enough for them to just sit out. Like, I'm good. It's enough for them to just not care, like apathy in the system.
But poor turnout's not going to help the Democrats any.
Nope, not at all. So I guess I don't know.
It's going to be there.
Yeah, I don't know if I articulated that correctly, but
you did.
But the point is that fatigue. So okay, so it's the other part of this too is if they don't push at this point. So if they turn over, they roll over the Schiffs and the Nadlers. And Pelosi's like, no, I'm good. And they're because they can't come out now and say, like, yeah, we were
rolling over. That was my thing. Okay. Is it rolling over to say this man? Because that's the thing. The other critical part of this is they've read about how trustworthy and whatnot Mueller is.
Here's
but
the
now
problem.
His word's not good enough.
It's political, right? Okay. Think about it. So it's by them, and I don't mean rolling over, or just conceding, right? That would be the right thing to do, concede and be like, look, you know what? We let it play out.
Mueller's damn much. He's spoken.
We let it play out, and we're good to go. We're pretty happy with this. That's potential revolution for.
I mean, AOC's not going to be happy. Her and her self-proclaimed posse, but are they ever going to be happy?
No. But the other part of this is it's fuel to the fire on the right, and it is the cultural meme of the libtard. The Democrat that's destroying the country, like that's fuel to that base, and it's enough to get a lot of other people fueled up too, because at this point they've gone too far, right? You can't stop now, because
and
if
unless
you,
there's a recession, that poses a very grave danger to any opposition to the president.
Yeah, so
because it means short of a recession. They don't have the juice beyond not liking the man.
Yeah, it's.
They didn't like him in 2016, and look where that got him.
Yeah, and the chances of. I mean, there's a lot of CEOs right now that predict a recession coming up, but even if listen, it's a recession, right? Recessions last like 11 months. This won't be a financial crisis recession. This will be a 2001 recession.
Right now, we're staring down the barrel of his reelection. I hope they realize that.
I mean, there's no way to play this right, but gosh, I see another 4 years of this guy. And I'm not saying I like that. I'm just saying I think that's the reality.
I don't think they have sense enough to nominate. I think the fix is already in against Senator Sanders again. And
Sanders doesn't beat Trump. I'm sorry. Like, I have no data to back that up. It's a completely instinctual, visceral reaction I have to it. But there's enough people that hate everything that Bernie stands for and enough moderate Democrats who are like, I don't know.
I guess my view is based on having heard the man speak literally dozens of times, having read his platform. I mean, the man has not changed in decades. How many politicians can say that? One. You know, I see a greater exposure to his message being one that Main Street America would relate to. Now, nothing would get done in D.C., so that we're very clear. Okay, yeah. He wouldn't get anything done without massive compromise. But I don't know. I could be completely wrong.
I guess
he got a better chance than
I think
some of the names.
I think Bernie's legacy will be that he shifted cultural perception on more socialist type platforms.
Because socialism's not as dirty of a word
exactly.
as it would be.
And I think that's an interesting episode we could have soon of socialism, the dirty word. And if you could just rebrand it, I think there's a lot of people that wouldn't have as big of a problem with some of the policies there. But anyway, look, before we dive on to where we could totally take a tangent and start talking about that. So let's cut it off here. We're at 25 minutes. Fresh out of time. We got another one to do. So with that, my friend, is always a privilege and honor to do this with you. So until next time.
Oh, wow.
We'll see you.